John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Green.
We're talking about the Nancy Guthrie ransom letters today from a psychological perspective. Now that they've been released in their entirety by the Sheriff's Department, lots of people looking at these have heard lots of different opinions onto what they are, how they were developed, what they mean, reading between the lines. And at the end of the day, it's all conjecture. But let's put our conjecture behind it. Let's put on our thinking hats, if you will, and dig deep into what is going on with the two Nancy Guthrie ransom letters that it seems the authorities believe may have some semblance of legitimacy to them, or at least they believe they came from the same people, these two letters. Not necessarily for sure the people who took Nancy Guthrie, but two in a row from the same people. Does it matter? We're going to read both of the letters on the show today, and then we're going to start going into it. The Sheriff's Department finally put both the notes out in full, and the reason they gave was psychological. They're not asking the public for a location. They're asking the public to recognize a man by how he writes. Siobhan Scott is a psychotherapist with 30 years in trauma and forensic work and the author of The Mind of Mass Killers, and she's with us every single Wednesday. We always appreciate that. We're going to go through both of these line by line exactly as it was released. And then I'm going to throw it to you, Siobhan, to get your initial reaction to it. So let's begin here. This is the first letter. It says, "Hello, Savannah. We have your mother, Nancy. She is safe but scared. She will be held for ransom. And once payment is received, she will be released unharmed. We'll be holding her for a maximum of 7 days. You will need to send Bitcoin in the amount of $4 million USD before 5 p.m. on Thursday the 5th. If payment is not received, the ransom will be increased to $6 million USD, which will need to be paid by 5 p.m. on Monday the 9th. Once payment is received to the Bitcoin address below, she will be released within 12 hours of deposit to a safe drop-off location back in Tucson. If payment is not received by the last deadline on Monday the 9th at 5 p.m., she will be killed. Your mother is aware of this and her life is in your hands. It is in the best interest of everyone to have this completed as soon as possible. You will not be able to contact me from here on out. There will be no negotiation. Do not play games. Law enforcement will not be able to help you." She had a smartwatch on the floor of the front of her bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That's how it signs off. That is note number one. That's what everybody has been dissecting. Siobhan, I'm going to throw it to you first. What's your overall take on this whole thing? Then we'll break it down further.
Well, I confess that when I read these notes, I was surprised. They strike me as procedural, you know, very, very clear. There's not really any emotion coming through. It could have been an HR memo, you know, that's just how it came off. It's like, here are my main points, no ranting, no rage, no anger, some things that you might typically see. But any kind of writing leaves a footprint. You know, you learn a lot about a person. So this struck me as an educated person, somebody who may write emails in their job, you know, that are sort of managerial. We don't know what kind of job, but somebody who's very comfortable with language and a good vocabulary, good punctuation. So somebody very comfortable with, you know, sending kind of these very procedural emails out. That was my initial thought.
Does that mean it's someone who who maybe has done this before in terms of sending ransom demands out, or maybe someone who, is sending out notes to shift workers on the line. How do you read into that?
Yeah, I can't say that there's anything that makes me think that they've done ransom notes before. Of course, that's possible. We're just speculating. But somebody that I think works in a capacity where they're firing off emails. You know, these are the procedures we follow. And I mean, it could be a paralegal. It could be somebody who works in HR. It could be somebody who's got a management position in some kind of company. But it struck me as somebody who's very comfortable with language and comfortable with procedures. I did run the notes through AI detectors just to see. I got no,
I was just going to do that, literally. I'm copying and pasting on this monitor over here because I was going to ask Grok, and I'll do it as we continue to go here. Robin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I did it too, and I've done multiple passes on this with AI, without AI, and the lack of consistency for pronouns, tenses, it shows most likely it is human derived, not AI derived. But there's a possibility, and this is what AI came up with, is possibility that, like many of us do now, is that you make an AI request and then you edit what you get. Yes. So there's definitely a human touch on this. What it is lacking, though, is it's lacking what you typically see in a letter for ransom. That does not fit that pattern whatsoever. And Siobhan, you made a great point there, and that is fired off. Yes, because it definitely does not look like this was the primary intent as the letter. The letter was not the primary intent because it's kind of all over the place. For a short letter, for a ransom note, it was not, does not come off cross because of the inconsistencies with the language, the procedural aspect of it. It like you said, it gives you that feeling like it was set, like, oh my gosh, I got to get this letter out, so I'll just send it now. Boom. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of time spent really making sure you're going to do it, because it definitely has the main intent was finance. Get something out of this house that wasn't gotten when they left.
Yeah. And the fact it was addressed to Savannah is significant. Did they look at her as the primary person with the money? Was it, as we've speculated before, was this motivated by some kind of personal grudge against her? That's not really clear. There's no real anger directed at her, but there's the interesting thing, you hold her life in your hands. Okay, so there's the deflection of responsibility. Right. No, clearly you're holding her life in your hands. It's not Savannah doing it.
And I definitely saw that too. It's not just only what's there, but it's not there, because I know a lot of people were theorizing that this was grudge, it was resentment. I didn't pick up any of that language whatsoever, especially then we haven't gotten to when we get to the second note there. This is not a letter of resentment. This was purely for financial gain. I didn't see anything else in there.
Transactional.
Transactional,
you do this and we'll do that. And here's our bullet points about what we want done. Yeah.
What do you make of the USD in there? After every time they talk about dollar amounts, it's USD. I mean, are they really thinking there's going to be some sort of confusion? They're like, oh, I thought you meant pesos. We sent the wrong type of currency. Is that just regular vernacular that you'd hear more along the border, where there may be some questions sometimes about what sort of currency you're paying in, depending on what side of the line you're on?
That's an interesting thought. Certainly could be, but it also could be, again, somebody that's just practiced at writing really clear procedure, transactional kinds of notes. This is what I want done, and here's specifically what I want done. Mm-hmm. So, that's a hard one.
And I'm with you on that one. I'm a maybe on that one because every time we see something, I always reverse it. What would I do in these situations? And I, as a solopreneur, I put US dollars, USD behind some transactions as well.
Sure.
If I'm dealing with groups and organizations that might have more of an international feel to it, I'll make sure. So it could be cross border. But I think, and I looked this up as well, when you're dealing with crypto, what I found also missing from this was time zone. So crypto acts on UTC time, and they didn't give. So when they said by 5 o'clock you need this, 6 o'clock this, what time zone? And so they made an assumption that it was actually standard time for where they were at in Arizona, and so that gave me the inclination, most likely local, and lack of sophistication. So they had a U.S. dollar as if an international sophistication to it, but they assumed that they knew what time zone it would be in, which, again, when you look up crypto acts on UTC time, you know, Greenwich Mean Time, basically, and not on local standard time anywhere in the States.
Great point.
Why limit yourself to a week? Why 7 days or we're going to kill her? Is it just, well, we got to move on to the next one and keep the cattle call rolling of who we're kidnapping? Or I don't know. I found that interesting, too, because I'm thinking if you have somebody and somebody wants them back and there's some sort of possibility that they will pay you, why are you setting a deadline for this? Or is that something that maybe would have been extended had she not allegedly died, according to the second letter? We'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, that strikes me again as procedural, you know, management. It's like you tend to say, I want this done, and here's the timeline that it needs to be done by. And yeah, that doesn't mean that they can't change their strategy or change, you know, be more flexible on it. Mm-hmm. But it sort of struck me that, you know, when I've written demand letters, I haven't written any of these kind of demand letters. But
when you've kidnapped people, Siobhan.
Yeah. But when I've written something, you know, I had to sue a contractor once who just was not following through. I don't think I actually sued them, but I threatened to sue them. And I gave a time zone. Mm-hmm. If I don't hear from you by, this is what I'm going to do. And so it could just be, you know, you're trying to be clear and precise and you want to see results and you don't want it dragged out, because perhaps the longer it's dragged out, the greater the odds that you're going to get caught.
She is safe, but scared. That's an interesting one. What is your take on that? She is safe, but scared. Telling her daughter he'll kill her, and he stops to say the woman is frightened. That line really isn't doing anything for him. It doesn't speed up the money, and it doesn't add pressure. I mean, is he calming Savannah down? Like, is she's okay? Or is that a reflection on himself or herself, or whoever's doing this?
It did strike me as when you have a tremendous attunement with your loved one, you don't want to think of them as scared. And so I think there is, it does add a layer of emotional pressure and intensity. She's suffering. She's not having a good time. She's frightened. And with all her health problems, you know, Savannah was well aware. Apparently, these people were aware to some degree that she had health problems. And look at her age. The fact that she's under this kind of pressure and is scared, I think that would push me to really act quickly. You don't want your loved one scared.
Yeah, definitely psychological pressure, lever of influence there. I'll tell you that those first three sentences are, I keep going back to it. She will be held for ransom. That, you know, will be held, you know.
Isn't she currently being held for ransom?
Yeah, I know. the language in there, it goes back to what Siobhan was saying. It was just fired off, not a lot of thought. You know, so both my first impressions, and you throw it through the Grok analyzer, it comes across and is written as plan B. This was not plan A. Plan A was go in the house, get something of value, and cash out. Something goes sideways. And the language in the letter, again, it's never anything's 100% of anything unless you ask the person, they tell you. But all the language indicators in this are saying this was plan B. The way it was written, the way it's delivered, definitely first rodeo when it comes to doing ransom, because this is not how any ransoms are ever given for people that actually the primary intent was to get money by taking a human being and holding them until I get money. Because again, that's boom, 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 boom. It stays transactional. It stays quick. It makes it easy. This is what you do. It's very authoritative. In, out, sign of life, proof of life, out. None of that is here on this one.
The the very end of it, letter one, where she had a white smartwatch on the floor at the foot of the bed, and the white floodlight in the backyard was destroyed. That line there. Obviously, that's someone who knows that they're going to be looking for some sort of proof that this is legit, that this is someone who was actually there and not just somebody making a ransom demand. They're aware that that's going to be in the consideration. And they thought that that was going to be enough of the carrot on the stick to be taken seriously. I guess, why wasn't it taken seriously? Or should it have been taken seriously? Or is it just a big nothing burger? Robin, I know you early on, and I think I have too, have said, well, I mean, you could make some random guesses at this just with a little bit of research. But I don't know. I mean, Siobhan, what's your thought on that end of it first?
That was really what tipped the scale for me into, you know, my idea that this was legitimate, because I think particularly the watch on the floor, it's like, that's not something you could just make a guess about and hit it.
Yeah.
And I'm tipping it towards, I think this person either was the one in the house or has knowledge of the person, you know, secondhand coming from in the house because of that. What was interesting, because I'm really focusing, words kind of jump out when they kind of strike me. The word destroyed was interesting. The floodlight in backyard was destroyed. So the first thing that enters my mind, all right, what destroyed that? Was it a stick? Was it a hands? Is there DNA on it? Is there shards? I mean, so the word destroyed, it wasn't broken, disabled, removed. You know, there's a lot of other adjectives you could use, but the word destroyed really jumped out at me, because destruction says that something happened to it intentionally. I want to discover what that was, because there might be also evidence there. But that's why I'm leaning towards these were most likely legit. I think law enforcement was and still is reticent to say they're legit from the sense of legit ransom notes, because again, for all the reasons I'm saying, and Siobhan is too, it doesn't ring true of a ransom as primary objective. And I know there's others, including, you know, Jen, that says this was the primary objective. Okay, I live in the world of maybe on all this is all open, but I'm just saying the language here, and this is why the behavioral team was reacting as if they were real. That's why they, from our conjecture, was working with Savannah to, you know, put out responses to these. So I think it's a strange mix on here. I think the person has either first or secondhand knowledge of the things in the house, because it is, there's a connection, but I do not think it was the primary of the person that wrote this was the ransom.
I mean, there's a lot of ways. I mean, we got to think of this too. It's not just as black and white of, well, the person that wrote this clearly did it because they had knowledge of where that there was a floodlight out and that the Apple Watch was on the ground. There's a lot of people who would have had knowledge of that. And a lot of people who I'm sure would have told people about that, because it wasn't necessarily like secret held back information at that moment in time. You had a lot of investigators combing that property. They were out. I mean, there was so much so that we had, 14 rubber gloves strewn around the property. And they're like, whoops, that was the FBI or somebody dropping them on the ground on an active crime scene. So you had that level of sloppiness going on. I would also guess that if you have that level of sloppiness of just, whoops, the gloves are falling all around here, and now we're thinking it might be the killers, might have the same sloppiness with words, might have the same sloppiness with information initially in this case. I don't think it's that far of a cry that somebody would have said, yeah, and that floodlight was destroyed, and they found her watch on the ground, and somebody heard that, and somebody thought, I might try and make a demand letter making them think it's Nancy Guthrie. Let's see if it goes to the crypto wallet. Some sick idiot that doesn't realize they could be caught for doing such a thing. I don't know. Is that too many degrees of separation for that to be a potential reality in a case like this? I'm going to go to Robin on that one first from an investigative standpoint.
It adds a level of complexity. And every time you add one more level of complexity, I think it diminishes probability.
Yeah.
Because it's always easier than that. But that's why I use the same phraseology. Whoever wrote this had either first or secondhand knowledge from somewhere of a few details that I found a little too random to be just thrown out there like an AI generated kind of randomness. I mean, I would have picked something else. I would have picked what she was wearing to bed or something like that. Or I wouldn't have put the Apple Watch actually on the ground. So I tend to think that's actually probably legit observation by someone passing along to someone else. Just who those people are is the interesting thing. And also just looking at the timeline, last seen, so first ransom note was one day after she was reported missing, about 2 days after she was last seen. So there's plenty of time in there. It is within the window, on the outside edge of the window of ransom notes typically being received if they are legit, but definitely enough time for word of mouth from different individuals. I haven't looked at who had actually access to that house that could have done that before then. Hopefully law enforcement has looked at that, but with nanos, you never know.
What are your thoughts, Siobhan?
Layer of complexity upon layer of complexity, and it's sure possible that somebody spilled that information. So yeah, it's a hard one to call.
Let's get your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, everybody, on ransom note number one. Why don't you go ahead and weigh in there? We, of course, read the comments, and we'll continue our conversation there. The links are in the description.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
John Daly here.
You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino.
Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Every dating app swap is another loss. Gym bros, fake CEOs, straight up losers. So now the only app I open is Moto Casino, because at least there I'm surrounded by winners, real winners, thousands of them. While everyone else is in the single swamp, I'm at home relaxing while stacking bonuses, hitting wins, and playing all my favorite Vegas style games. Moto Casino, the only app worth your time.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Moto Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casino's the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino.